broadcast out of New York City. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, June 20th, 2011. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Every Monday, live from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Please note that our shows will also be archived on drsaputo.com.
You'll hear Vicki's 2020 tips at 20 after the hour and 20 to the hour. And we have a great show for you today that will include, how important is your anesthesiologist when you go to surgery?
Is it realistic to use a combination of hypnosis and a local anesthetic for major surgical procedures?
And are doctors just too quick to reach for their prescription pads?
Can a diabetic drug cause cancer? And much more. Plus, if you want to join in our conversation and you have questions about our topics, give us a call at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Before we get into our topics and our callers this morning, how about sharing with us a little bit about this DVD that you watched this morning on the internet?
You know, Stanislaw Brzezinski is in the news all the time, and he's been in the news since about 1980. And who is he? He's a researcher in medicine who has some cures for some kinds of cancers that are called antineoplastins. And I was stunned today as I received an email from a friend from Australia that says, check out www.brzezinskimovie.com.
How do you spell Brzezinski?
B-U-R-Z-Y-N-S-K-I movie.com. And I listened to about an hour and a half of it just before the show today, and I was amazed at how much information's on that site that shows the ruthlessness of the FDA, of many of the state medical boards, and it's just how we conduct business in this country when it comes to pharmaceutical drugs
and
breakthroughs in medicine. Absolutely. I mean, he has been through four or five situations where he's been in court with the FDA. He was tried to be riddled by people who were in the state medical board of Texas. And he's survived all this and is now involved with National Institutes of Health Research. And the way these anti-neoplastins work is that they turn off the cancer genes, the ones that make cancers grow. It is a completely non-toxic approach to treating cancer. And it's not like it works all the time. It doesn't. But when you look at some of the treatments that there are for the cancers that we're using, particularly kids who are young and say up to the age of 5 or 10 years old, who have brain tumors for which we have no adequate treatment except for serious radiation poisoning and chemotherapy that's very toxic. This is a major breakthrough, especially since none of those people are living 5 years or more. And a whole lot of these people that Brzezinski is treating are being cured, and probably 25% of the time they're living long lives.
I remember about 15 years ago, we were at an international conference on integrative medicine that was in Washington
Seattle.
State. Yes, Seattle. And you and I interviewed Dr. Brzezinski as well as some of his patients.
It was amazing.
Yes, it was. They brought them along. There was even a little baby that the doctors had just said, well, it's going to die from this brain tumor. And he was able to cure this baby. They had the baby there.
And the parents.
And there was a boy that was a teenager. And he would get this treatment. And he could wear it underneath his shirt. And he could even do it at school. Usually he did it when he came home. But he could even have the treatment during school. And nobody could even tell that he was getting this IV.
And it's totally non-toxic. Nobody's ever been hurt by this treatment. And yet we've got Big Pharma owning the FDA for the most part. I mean, that's so out of the box now. If you got any doubts about that, check out the film Death by Medicine that Gary Null has put out. It's stunning, the information that's on there, and all done in a very professional way.
And many times when people have cancer, the treatment is like almost worse than what the cancer is. It makes people so sick.
Exactly.
And it makes their whole body toxic. And even if they survive the treatment at the time, later on they can get side effects from the chemotherapy. I mean, it can affect people's hearts.
Oh, for sure.
It can give them neuropathies, all kinds of things.
You can even get cancers from the treatment.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're perfect. In fact, they're so far from perfect that a lot of the time I wonder what we're doing when we prescribe chemotherapies for a lot of the solid cancers that are out there, because the treatments just don't work that well.
But if people want to get this sort of treatment that Dr. Brzezinski offers, mm-hmm. you pretty much have to go to Texas to do it.
Yeah, so get into one of his clinical trials. You know, you can go to Brzezinski Movie. It's Brzezinski Movie.com. And by the way, for today only, if you do that, the film can be viewed for free. But I would encourage anybody who listens to it to buy the DVD.
It's only $14,
why?
I think.
Yeah, and we want to support Brzezinski. He needs the money to continue his research. And when you see what's on this film, don't, you know, listen to it first. Watch it first. And then make up your mind to see whether or not this is something that you believe in enough that you'd like to support it financially.
But today is Monday, June the 20th, and this is the only day that
it's free. All right. So
the number here at Prescriptions for Health on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and on DrSaputo.com is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888.
Last week we talked a little bit about infrared light therapy, and people called in because they were concerned about their neuropathies, and meaning they had numb feet and pain in their feet. A lot of people who have the numbness in their feet also have pain, particularly people who have diabetes, but also people who have chemotherapy-induced neuropathy or heavy metal poisoning or a lot of illnesses. And this treatment is making incredible strides forward. In fact, I'm proud to say that I'm involved with a research grant from the National Institutes of Health for $5 million today that's being run at the University of California, San Francisco, that will start up very soon. Because they know, based on the pilot study that I provided for them, that what we have here is a way to treat chemotherapy-induced neuropathy, of which millions of people are suffering from. And we can also treat people who have diabetic neuropathy. We did a clinical trial on that a few years ago that showed that. And we'll be doing a second trial that will be more than the initial trial that we did, that was more of a pilot study, to show that, in fact, this works. And what's amazing to me about this treatment is that it's non-toxic. It doesn't hurt anybody. It resolves those symptoms usually in just a few 15-minute treatments, often just two or three or four treatments. The pain disappears. And this pain is searing, horrible pain that stops people from being able to function in their lives normally.
And what's weird is their feet are often numb on the bottoms at the same time that they're having this horrible pain.
Mm-hmm.
And because their feet are numb, when they walk, a lot of times they stumble or fall or hurt themselves.
Or they wind up with injuries to their feet that wind up in ulcerations and amputations in about 15% of the cases of people who have diabetes.
But if people want to know more about the photon stimulator, it's a PHOTON stimulator, mm-hmm. you can go to www.drsaputo, which is S-A-P-U-T-O, S-A-P like in Paul, U like, and then
in
T
United
like in
States.
Tom, O.com, and look up the photon stimulator or go to near infrared light and you can learn more about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the number again here at Prescriptions for Health is 888-874-4888. Now, whether you have elective surgery or emergency surgery, it's a good idea to ask certain questions of your anesthesiologist. We've all heard the expression that the surgery was a success, but the patient died.
Right.
And there was a European study that showed that most anesthesiologists are not checking patients' cardiac output, which can make a significant impact on a patient's recovery.
I'll
say. So, what is cardiac output, and why is it being neglected if it's so important?
Well, see, what we're interested in doing during surgery from the point of view of anesthesiology is making sure that we're delivering oxygen and nutrients to the tissues. That means we have to ventilate right. We have to have enough oxygen carrying capacity in our bloodstream, which is determined by the hemoglobin level that we have. So it's really important to know that we have enough hemoglobin, and that's why we're doing hemoglobin checks before surgery. But we also have to be sure that we have enough oxygen being delivered to the lungs so that it can saturate that hemoglobin with oxygen to be able to provide oxygen to the tissues. So those are two of the important factors. But the third one is, well, how much good does it do to have a high hemoglobin concentration and a high oxygen concentration, but insufficient cardiac output, because the heart has to pump blood around the body. But if it's not doing an adequate job of that, you're going to have problems nourishing the body during the critical time of surgery. So what we found is that if we will make sure that we measure cardiac output, which is not done routinely, only about 35%, as Vicki was talking about, of anesthesiologists are doing that for the major surgeries, this becomes a critical factor.
And this is why it's helpful for you and us, everybody, to take responsibility for your own health. You know, you can't always just depend on the doctor and the anesthesiologist. It's good to have some knowledge, which is one of the reasons why we do this show, because we want to empower you with knowledge. So keep that as a note somewhere.
What Vicki's saying is you got to check things out. You got to check out your anesthesiologist. I know, because I've been in medicine for 40 years, some of the things that happen, and I can tell you there's some absolutely wonderful anesthesiologists out there, but there's a few bad apples too. And if you get one of those bad apples because that guy has a problem with alcohol, or he's on drugs, or she's on drugs, or they're just sleepy and they're not taking their work seriously enough, and there are apples like that, you're in trouble. You could have the best surgeon, and if you don't have a good anesthesiologist, you're still in big trouble.
There are 30 million patients in the world that undergo high-risk surgery every day. And when we
every
say
year.
Every year.
Right.
Sorry, I'm glad you caught me on that one. And that can include things like your liver, your pancreas, your aorta, cancer.
Your heart.
Back. Yeah, of course.
Your
back,
brain.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about this, the brain problems that we get from not enough oxygen are huge. The complications of anesthesia happen probably in every single person that goes to anesthesia, meaning that you're going to lose a few brain cells every time there's a general anesthetic, anytime you're not getting adequate oxygenation. And think about it this way. If you're in surgery for an 8 or a 10-hour surgery, which is not that uncommon these days for some surgeries.
That's a long time.
And your anesthesiologist has a 10-minute lapse, you're cooked. Because you go without oxygen for just a few minutes, you got problems.
So if you have this cardiac output being done,
it'll help.
You have fewer post-op complications, you have shorter hospital stays, fewer people die.
Yeah, little things like that kind of make a big difference, huh?
And some of the post-op complications that people can have are even can include things, you know, like we all know of infection, but how would oxygen be related to, like, infection and kidney failure? I could see how it could be related to pneumonia.
Mm-hmm. Well, with infection, too, because if you set the stage where there's not enough oxygenation, the body's defenses can't work anymore because they're not nourished and they can't function. So you have to have oxygen in all the tissues of the body. We start depending on anaerobic metabolism, which doesn't use oxygen. We can't survive very well.
So most people, when they're preparing for surgery, the doctor or the anesthesiologist requests an EKG, that's an electrocardiogram, some lab work, a history and physical, and a chest x-ray. But is this really enough before somebody goes to surgery?
I don't think so. It depends on what you're doing. See, I keep thinking of the Pete Wilson story out here. Pete was a news broadcaster who was revered, wonderful guy on Channel 7 in Northern California. And he went to surgery with an elective hip. And he was a little terrified of going to the surgery. And he even talked with Gene Burns the night before
on
his show.
KTO Radio.
Yeah, talking about how worried he was that he thought he wasn't going to be okay at the surgery. And he wound up going to the emergency room that night. And they kind of checked him over, did the routine EKG again, and said, "Look, you're fine, Pete. Don't worry about it." Well, he went to surgery the next day, and he died on the table of a massive coronary, massive heart attack. Now, there are other things that could have been done to screen him. And, of course, taking somebody like that to surgery is nothing more than insanity.
When somebody's scared like that.
That's a terrible thing.
I mean, even the listeners on the radio show were trying to reassure him.
Right. Well, we're going to come back to that and talk about some of the tests that we think are important to use as pre-op screening for people who are having major surgeries. But it's time for Vicki's 2020 tip. So here we are.
I have some tips on getting older. So there are three signs of old age. The first is your loss of memory and I kind of forget the other two.
Jeez. That's great.
You're getting old when you don't care where your spouse goes, just as long as you don't have to go along. Whoops.
Oh, dear.
Hey, guys, you know you're getting in on years when the girls at the office start confiding in you.
Oh, that's true. That's right.
And middle age is when it takes longer to rest than to get tired.
Isn't that the truth? I hate to say it, but I'm learning some of these things myself now.
The aging process could be slowed down if it had to work its way through Congress.
Oh, dear.
Isn't that the truth?
That is the truth.
You're getting old when you're sitting in a rocker and you can't get it started. The cardiologist diet. If it tastes good, spit it out. Doctor to patient, I have good news and bad news. The good news is that you are not a hypochondriac.
Oh, jeez. That's bad news.
Oh, it's hard to be nostalgic when you can't remember anything. you find yourself in the middle of the stairway and you can't remember if you were downstairs going up or upstairs going down.
Mm.
Well, I have to admit I've actually had a few of those things myself.
Maybe it's from the anesthesia that we had when we had the little minor surgeries we had. Maybe.
Yeah, you never know about that. Well, anyway, we were talking about hypnosis and anesthesia and that kind of thing. Hadn't gotten to hypnosis. We're going to talk about that now.
Yeah, we're talking about that. How do you pick an anesthesiologist? It's sort of like it's really critical. You get somebody that's your life is in their hands, and they have a little lapse of consciousness and not paying attention to what happens. It can be a serious thing. I know when I went to surgery, I had a spinal anesthetic. Okay, this was recently.
Yeah, we thought that would be safe.
Yeah, it was a hip resurfacing, and it was done by somebody who'd done several hundred of them, so I felt like I was in good hands with a surgeon. But as it turns out, as they're manipulating my leg and they're doing this hammering and all the things that they do, that I think what happened is when the anesthesiologist injected more of the anesthetic into my spine, is that the surgeon was doing something and the anesthesiologist wasn't paying attention.
And it went up instead of down.
And yeah. I wound up with a neuropathy and with a blood pressure drop, a systolic, a top pressure of 60.
You had what they call a sympathetic blockade.
It was a real big deal. So how important is having an anesthesiologist? I can attest that it's huge. But the question Vicki was asking here is, well, maybe anesthesia is important. No question about that. But what kind of test should be done prior to going to surgery? Is it enough to do an EKG, a few little blood tests, and have a cursory examination? And my answer to that is, I don't think so. I think it would be not only cost-effective, but it would save lives and save morbidity if we screened a little bit more thoroughly with tests that are not expensive, that are very predictive of how people will do at surgery. And one of those tests is called a heart rate variability test. And in anybody who's over the age of 40, and even in many cases people under the age of 40, this is a test that measures the rhythm of the heart. When the heart beats at a fixed rhythm like a metronome, you've got problems because it means it cannot adapt to changes in respiration or in how you feel or and maybe even in exercise levels.
Like, for example, when you're sleeping, it's going to be slower than when you're taking a walk.
Well, it's going to vary when you're sleeping, and it's going to vary when you're breathing and when you're walking or when you're doing anything. And if it doesn't vary as it should, there is no test more predictive in all of medicine of all-cause mortality, okay, and of your risk for a heart attack. So when someone like Pete Wilson, who we were talking about earlier, that died on the table because of his state of mind and probably because he had heart disease, we know he did, that was not really discovered at the time, this test would be very valuable to have, and it's a Medicare-approved test. But doctors aren't doing it much.
So this is where it's good for the patient to ask the doctor.
Well, I would require it. And in people that I send to surgery, I always get that test. It's like a $100 test, depending on where you get it. Maybe as much as $250, depending on where you get it. And you'll know a lot more about what to expect and what your risks are. So this is a big deal and something that should be done on a regular basis.
What are some of the other tests that you might order that other doctors might not order?
Depending on someone's age and their situation, I might also do something called a vascular stiffness test, which is also another Medicare-approved test that's not expensive that will tell you how much arteriosclerosis you have. It's just taking a pulse wave from your finger, analyzing what that wave looks like, and then going ahead and being able to determine whether or not there's arteriosclerosis, because the stiffer the arteries are and the bigger the blockage is there, the less of a pulse and the less of a normal shape pulse you'll find.
And normally, I guess what doctors order is a cholesterol level.
Well, they might do that. For a pre-op, I don't think they would, actually.
Oh.
What they do is a blood count. They want to be sure there's enough hemoglobin there so it can carry oxygen. They may want to do a few tests on electrolytes, and usually it's a sodium and potassium. They're not even looking at things like magnesium, which I think is another must to do before surgery. You go to surgery with a low magnesium, you're in deep pucky. So those are the major things that I would do on my patients, and the things that I think you should be thinking of if you're going to surgery, and particularly if you're going to have a surgery that's a major surgery that's more apt to cause complications.
And what about a live blood analysis?
That's getting pretty sophisticated, and it's not a mainstream treatment. It's a little bit more expensive. It's something that if you had heart disease, you had an attack in the past, or you were in congestive heart failure, or you had a previous stroke, you'd like to know, are your blood cells sticky? Do the red cells stick together? Do the platelets stick together? Can you see evidence of clotting in the bloodstream? Looking at live blood in a dark field micro 10,000 power. And I can tell you, that's really informative in that setting. And I don't send anybody to surgery who has a problem, blood that's too thick, because there are sitting ducks for thrombophlebitis, for heart attacks, and for strokes.
So it's important to be prepared, talk to your anesthesiologist, and ask about cardiac output during your surgery. I think it's also important to be ready, body, mind, emotion, and spirit,
absolutely,
where Pete Wilson really wasn't. And what about, integrative anesthesia?
Well, that's another great topic to allude into. You know, we talked, now there's an article that came out just recently that's looking at how we can go ahead and do things different doing mainstream medicine as far as anesthesia is concerned.
Well, when a person has a local anesthetic, it's usual procedure to have a sedative and or an amnesic along with it. However, there's this new study from the Netherlands that shows that using a combination of hypnosis and local anesthesia for certain types of can aid the healing process and reduce drug use and time spent in the hospital.
Yeah, it's a great thing to keep in mind. And if you can avoid using anesthetic, think of it this way. When you're in deep anesthesia and somebody has to breathe for you and has to regulate complications that go at the same time, and is preoccupied with whatever else is going on from the point of view of keeping you in a stable situation, the less you do, the better. Plus, you're adding, when you give a general anesthetic, a very toxic chemical that the liver has to detoxify. And what situation would be the worst to do that? In somebody who's sick, who's already toxic, that already has a big load of detoxification on their liver. These are not things we think of so much. A lot of the time when a patient comes to the hospital, what's in our mind? How do we get this job done as easily as we can, as confidently as we can, and in a way where we're not going to be disturbed from our usual routines? We don't want to be up at 3 in the morning doing a surgery or doing some kind of procedure. We don't want to have to make it any more complicated than it has to be from the point of view of our getting the job done. And so some of the time, the factors that come into play are ones that we shouldn't be struggling with. We shouldn't be doing the most complex form of anesthesia. We can do something that's more minor, like hypnosis and local anesthesia, even for a major operation. I've seen a video, and probably many of you have as well, that was back in the 60s. When President Nixon at the time went to China, and he was doing some studies on, he's trying to improve relations, what he found was that they told him about using acupuncture at surgery, and he brought back a video that was a wonderful video that showed somebody getting a major operation, and during that operation, all they had for anesthesia were a few acupuncture needles, and the person was eating an orange during the procedure. It was like, oh my gosh, How sophisticated can it get?
And I remember when I was a student nurse, I saw a cesarean section done under hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a major surgery.
Now, why, after all these years, do we still rely on the general anesthetics that have a toxic component to them that put us into a deep meditative state where we can't even breathe for ourselves when we have these other approaches? Why haven't we expanded that so that we can do something that's safer, works as well, tends to have fewer hospital complications.
And less time in the hospital.
And fewer deaths. I mean, all these things are things that we should be looking at. It's time for a station break. When we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit more about this topic, so stay tuned.
You're listening to the Progressive Radio Network, celebrating 5 years of independent points of view.
Hey, did you miss your favorite show? Don't worry, PRN has you covered. Just log on to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and go to the archive page where you can choose from any of our great programs. Listen or download shows from yesterday or even ones dating months back. The Progressive Radio Network, striving to make your lives easier.
The shaky economy, peak oil, and now an unstable climate. Get the inside story with Alex Smith on Radio EcoShock. Top scientists find a looming catastrophe while activists try for change. Experts, authors, and alternative media from around the world and around the corner. Hear it all. Radio EcoShock every Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Listen free and live free right here on PRN, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Cotel with Sierra Club Radio. Tune in Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com to hear interviews with green authors, activists, politicians, celebrities, and more.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. This is a special call out to all of our WPFW audience who have been listening for 26 years, now can listen over the internet. My normal time has been 3 o'clock for 26 years. Now we're shifting it to 7 p.m. because more people said they would be available to listen at 7. That's fine. We're also going to do a different type of program. It's issues only, but very in-depth, original, investigative reporting, and commentaries, for example, today from Russell Targ, on disasters, arrogance, and greed, from the Titanic to Fukushima, why we don't learn about what corrupts and how people in power assume they're infallible, but they are. For those of you who've asked yourself, is there any truth behind the idea that a relatively small group of people, probably in the neighborhood of about 10,000 people all told, have been able to work together in different organizations and foundations like the Bilderbergs, the Council on Foreign Relations Trilateral Commission, and other groups to really sponsor this notion of globalization? On the left, they say no, it's all myth. On the right, they don't pay attention to it. We do. Andrew Gavin Marshall, professor, will be doing an in-depth analysis of the Bilderbergs, the Rockefellers, and the high priests of globalization. And I think you will really appreciate this because this is real scholarship. This will actually show you who founded the Bilderbergers and what they are doing. They just met in secret again, as they do each year. What are their plans for us? And why is it the world media has done nothing about it at all? Then everything we're doing now was planned before 9/11. From Washington's blog, Global Research, a very respected group, a short essay on, we've been told that 9/11 changed everything. Is it true? We'll look at the facts. The Afghan War was planned before 9/11, and a lot of other important decisions. The Patriot Act was planned before 9/11. Indeed, former counterterrorism czar Richard Clark told Stanford Law professor Loris Lessig that after 9/11, the government drew up the Patriot Act within 20 days, and it passed. Well, the Patriot Act is huge, and I remember someone asking a Justice Department official, how did they write up such a large statute so quickly? And of course the answer was, it's been sitting in the drawers of the Justice Department for the last 20 years waiting for an event where they could pull it out. And finally, Michael Hudson will be my guest today, talking about when only crazies see the bank giveaway for what it is. Now, that's merely sarcasm, meaning those who actually saw the Federal Reserve and how it gave money to Wall Street is wrong, but everyone else in the official establishment, the media, the government, said, well, this just makes sense. If we don't save the too big to fail, then all of us goes over the cliff. Not so. And we'll have Michael Hudson on to talk about it. Only important social issues that are not getting the attention of the rest of the media will be covered on the 7 o'clock Monday evening programs. I'm Gary Nall, back to our regular programming. I look forward to seeing you here in just about 2.5 hours.
All women, are you looking for truthful answers to help you safely and naturally navigate the many hormonal challenges that you face during your lifetime? This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. I'm a naturopathic doctor, author, psychotherapist, writer, and women's health advocate. Join me entering into the Women's Healing Circle, a weekly call-in show with the holistic practitioners, authors, researchers, and wise elders who share truthful information, education, and wisdom. Join me every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time to enter the Women's Healing Circle right here on Progressive Radio Network.
The Progressive Radio Network, your home for progressive thinkers.
You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Lynn Sabuna here with Nurse Vicki. The number, if you have a question about your health, is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. And I think we have a caller. Is Joe on the line?
Hi.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Okay. I have actually two questions, if I can.
Sure.
The first one is, in regard to last week's show, someone called up about neuropathy in the feet. You said that usually it's caused by chemotherapy, and induced chemotherapy treatments and diabetes. But what if someone has no physical, no high blood pressure, no cholesterol, no diabetes, no nothing, and they have it? Mm-hmm. Can you explain in depth what causes it? And the second question is, if someone is over like 60 years old and they haven't had, they've gone through menopause, postmenopause, why do women once in a great while get like a hot flash or a sweat during the day? And can I listen to this off the air?
Sure, you bet, Joe. Thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you.
You have a great day. Okay, Joe wants to know why people get neuropathy in their feet when they have no particular known cause.
And if you have any questions about your health, the number here at Prescriptions for Health is 888-874-4888.
All right, so back to Joe's question. There are really a couple of causes for neuropathy. One, in the case of diabetes, is where there's not enough blood flow to the nerves of the feet. So the sympathetic nervous system, which regulates blood flow, is way overstimulated in diabetes. And so when that happens, it vasoconstricts or narrows the arteries that supply the nerves of the feet. And so the nerves of the feet become oxygen depleted. They don't have enough nutrients to function. And they basically stop working right and become numb. But at the same time, in about 25% of those people, pain is associated with it because the nervous system's what are called C fibers get out of sync. and they get hypersensitive, and you have both numbness and pain. Now, the other major cause of neuropathies is when you put something toxic on a nerve. It could be a chemotherapy agent. It could be heavy metal poisoning. It could be some systemic disease that you have that's affecting nerves. It can ruin the myelination of nerves. Lots of situations like that. So those are the causes. But the nice thing is this infrared light therapy called photonic stimulation is very effective at treating that. And I'd say in diabetics, about 90% of the time in my experience, people in just 3 or 4 treatments, they no longer have pain. The numbness has improved substantially. And when that happens and sensation gets better, they know where their feet are when they're walking so that at night they don't have to leave that night light on because they can't feel their feet. And they don't have to watch where their feet are going because they can't feel the ground that well. So that's in that situation. So the infrared light therapy or photonic stimulation is a very powerful approach to that. And if you want more information about that, Joe, my suggestion is go to my website at drsaputo.com. That's Dr. D-O-C-T-O-R, Saputo, S-A-P-U-T-O.com, and put in infrared light therapy, and you'll see all kinds of audios and videos and some text describing how that works. Now, Joe, for your second question. Why do women who are past the menopause still get hot flashes? Well, if I knew the answer to that and I had some kind of solution that was really good, I would be a multimillionaire today.
Well, I know some of the reasons why.
Indeed. All right, tell us.
It has to do with sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Just try it. Go to bed at night and have eaten something sweet or had a glass of wine, and you're probably going to get a hot flash, mm-hmm. especially if you do it at bedtime.
Yeah, there are a lot of people doing work on that. Dr. Ellen Cutler, who is doing work with that and diet and with enzyme therapy. Again, if you put Ellen Cutler in the web search box on drsaputo.com, her work will come up and it will talk more about that. But basically what happens is that the hypothalamus, okay, which is a part of the brain that regulates hormone levels in the body, doesn't work quite right in people who have these ongoing sweats and hot flashes. And we don't have really effective treatments for it, although we know that we can slow them down substantially if we do what's called hormone replacement therapy. But I would not advise doing that the conventional way, which has been using a combination of Premarin, which is really pregnant horse mare urine estrogen.
Nay.
Yeah, so if you want to have horse estrogens in your body that are likely to make lots of things happen that you don't want, like heart attacks and strokes and clots in your legs and cancers, stick with that. And the other thing that's often given is something called Provera, which is a progesterone-like substance that is not progesterone that does cause cancer and other problems.
They changed it so they could sell it as a drug because you can't sell something that's natural in a pharmaceutical company.
Exactly. So natural progesterone is not patentable. So they stick a side chain on it, do all these studies, look at as many positive things as they can and say, here, it's like progesterone, take this. And what they're really saying is, here, buy this drug so that you can get some of the benefits, more complications, but we'll also get a little cut of the profits here, which is what it's really about. So hormone replacement therapy using Premarin Provera is a no-no in my book. And anybody who does that, I think, is practicing silly medicine. What I would consider doing is using natural estrogens and natural progesterone in the more advanced cases. And that can be done by measuring hormone levels, getting them through the saliva, I think, is the most accurate way to do it, and see what comes up.
And then you would only do that on the short term, too, right?
Probably just in the short term. And I'm not inclined to start with that. I always start with lifestyle measures first.
Exercise.
Exercise is really powerful. If you exercise more than 3.5 hours a week, chances are you'll cut your hot flashes and sweats in half or more. And you'll be fit, and you'll have the endorphins that go with it. You'll have the benefit of losing some weight. You'll feel good. Lifestyle is huge. And you talked about dietary measures. There are some people who think that carbohydrates, simple carbohydrates, and alcohol are problems. And I think there's some data to support that. Getting enough sleep. another big thing, which, of course, is hard to do when you're having hot flashes yes. and sweats. And so you may have to do some meditative things. You may want to try some acupuncture. That can work. What I would not do, again, is resort to the big drugs that we tend to do in mainstream medicines, things like Neurontin or Clonidine or some of the other beta blockers. People are using a lot of powerful drugs to try and do what they can to prevent the hot flashes. But we've gone over here. It's time for your 2020 tip, Vicki. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this and remind you that you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. So give us a call if you have a question about your health.
Before I start getting into this 2020 tip, I'd like to talk about what GM stands for and GE stands for and GMO, because it's genetically modified organisms, or GE is genetically engineered.
Ah, it's not General Electric, huh?
Yeah, and GM is for genetically modified, so they're all used interchangeably. And that's what I'm going to be talking about with this 2020 tip, because there are toxins implanted into GM food crops to kill pests, and they're reaching the bloodstreams of women and unborn babies.
Mm-hmm.
And a landmark study found that 93% of blood samples taken from pregnant women and 80% from umbilical cords tested positive for chemicals. Now, there are millions of acres in North and South America that are planted with genetically engineered corn containing the toxins, which is fed in vast quantities, we all know, to farm livestock around the world. And it's now clear that the toxins designed to kill the crop pests are reaching humans and babies in the womb. Now, there's speculation that it could lead to allergies and miscarriage and abnormalities or even cancer. You know, I always say, if in doubt, don't, but our government practices go for it until it's proven absolutely harmful. And then the tests are often biased, or they're not followed through due to monetary connections and that kind of thing. But this latest study has triggered calls for a ban on imports and an overhaul of the safety regimen for the genetically engineered crops and the food. Now, most of the global research which has been used to demonstrate the safety of genetically engineered crops has been funded by, guess who? The industry itself.
Yeah, of course.
Now, does this sound familiar? It sounds like Big Pharma. It sounds like the cosmetic industry. And the new study was carried out by independent doctors in Quebec, Canada. And these include something that's called BT toxins, which are implanted using the genetically engineered techniques to the corn and some of the other crops. Now, it's thought that the toxin is getting into the human body as a result of eating things like meat and milk and eggs from livestock. Guess why? Because they're fed genetically engineered corn.
Oh, gosh.
You know, so when you hear that something's corn-fed, that's not a good thing. You know, we're always hearing, oh, well, this is really special. Yeah. This is corn-fed.
It's like somebody saying, yeah, this is a lake trout. It's a lake salmon. This is farm-raised salmon. It's the best.
Or this is Japanese fish.
That's right. That's right.
Well, this is the first study to highlight pesticides associated with genetically modified foods in maternal, fetal, and non-pregnant women's blood. And the BT toxin was clearly detectable and appears to cross the placenta to the fetus. Now, this research is major, and it shows that the BT proteins have survived the human digestive system and passed into the blood supply. This is really important to know this, because the manufacturers of it have been trying to tell us that they're destroyed in our
intestinal
tract.
Yeah, sure.
And these regulators said that this couldn't happen. So the regulators need to reassess their opinions and use safeguard clauses in the regulations to prevent further GMBT crops being cultivated or imported for animal feed or food until the potential health implications have been evaluated. You know, Europe does things like this way before the United States.
Isn't that the strangest thing?
There's a definite
yeah.
pattern.
Really?
And, of course, there's a lot of opposition from the agriculture biotech council, which speaks for the genetically engineered industry, which claims that GE is safe. So we eat GE food every day, and we don't even know it most of the time, because it's not required that our food be labeled GE.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
And that's why we need to look for non-GE.
Exactly.
The only way we know is if they write on there non-GE, or if they're organic, then they're not genetically engineered. However, there's still the question now of cross-pollination.
Oh, for sure.
And it's not just corn and soy and meat and dairy. I mean, do a Google on GE products and beware of what you eat.
You know, we'll do just about anything if you can make a buck on it. We need to evolve to a higher level of consciousness where we're really interested in doing the right thing that's service-oriented rather than what can I get, how much money can I make, even at the expense of human lives. It's not right. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. So if you have a question about your health, give us a call.
So here's a study on the principles of conservative prescribing funded by government grants. Actually, this article was written up in the Archives of Internal Medicine, and it summarizes what's going on with prescription drugs from the Center for Patient Safety and Research and Practice in Boston, which is a nonprofit to improve safety in healthcare. And I say yay to that. So
tell us
what this Dr. Schiff, who's the associate director of the center, has to say.
Well, he's been saying the same thing we've been saying and Gary Null has been saying for decades. And that's that medicine is too complicated. It's too hard to practice in a way that's safe, that works well. And the problem is that a lot of the things we think about are reflexively using drugs. And what I say is we're way too quick to reach for our prescription pads. On a day, on a normal day when I was in practice 25 years ago, before I knew all this really, even though I'm board certified in internal medicine, I always thought drugs were the answer to all the problems we had. So if you mentioned diabetes, I'd think of 15 or 20 different drugs you could use.
Well, that's what MD stands for, doesn't it? Medical doctor.
Well,
medicine doctor.
Well, that really is true. I mean, that is how we think. And so we're quick to prescribe a drug, and we tend to use the ones that are new and are the fashion drug of the day rather than the older ones. If we're going to use a drug that is one that's been time tested, what we have now is a way of fast tracking drugs through the FDA. And of course, the pharmaceutical industry pays somewhere around $500 million a year to influence the pharmaceutical industry, because those are the funds that they're paying to get their drugs fast-tracked through the FDA, which means that they can, instead of waiting 18 months to get an approval, get it done in 6 months. Now, you think that's great. Charge them all you possibly can, but it backfired, because what that really means now is that the FDA has become dependent on that $500 million a year, and so they are now owned by the pharmaceutical industry far more than we'd like to see.
It's like the pharmaceutical industry is almost supporting them.
Well, it is. And that's why we see some of the things that we see in medicine today, and why doctors are still so brainwashed by direct-to-consumer ads, by the medical literature that is published. And that's how we practice.
Well, so, instead of the latest and the greatest, we want fewer and more time-tested drugs.
Exactly.
Most of the time, the new drugs, we're the guinea pigs, and they're testing them on us.
And that's if you're going to use drugs at all. Because in my practice now, I have to know what the drugs do. Because when you practice outside the mainstream and you start doing things that are safer and lifestyle oriented, you better know what you're not using so that you can defend yourself to your colleagues and to your medical board if an issue comes up.
Well, that's what I thought was so great about this Dr. Schiff at the center.
Exactly.
Because he is saying that doctors are too quick to write a prescription.
Well, and if you use lifestyle medicine, you're using an approach that's 100 or 1,000 times more effective than pharmaceutical drugs are. But with the direct-to-consumer ads being what they are, we tend to focus on that because we're easily brainwashed. And the same thing happens to our doctors as they're getting their training, as they're going through their medical school days, their internships and residencies, because who do you think is supporting the funding of the educational programs? It's the big pharmaceutical industry itself that's paying for the grants, for research, for the lectures, for whatever else that they say they're donating. They're not good guys.
So we need to promote a different way of thinking about practicing medicine because of this over-prescribing.
Exactly.
And the side effects often don't justify the benefits and vice versa.
Well, look at it this way, Vicki. A third of the people in the United States that are over 60 take five or more drugs. My patients at over 60 rarely take one drug because we're doing things to help them understand why they got sick and what they can do to change it around.
To try to get at the cause instead of just treating the symptoms.
Exactly. There's a big difference between curing symptoms and healing somebody. Usually you've got to go back.
Well, you do both when you do the photon stimulator.
Well, that's true. Well, yes, indeed. Well, whenever I do most anything I do, I'm thinking about what can I do to help this person feel better and what can I do about giving them a safe approach that gets at the cause of what's going on. And it's not like that's an easy thing to do because it takes a lot of time. You have to do two things. You have to listen and you have to care. And you can't just be focused on how much money am I going to get. It's about providing a service that's going to make a difference. It's not about some kind of HMO that's like a manufacturing line where you do this and this and this and this and you've got a certain protocol to follow and it follows a lot of drugs and technologies. And I'm not saying that drugs and technologies are all bad, but for the most part, they're not the way I like to practice medicine.
Well, doctors and patients both are way too influenced by drug ads.
No question.
And then think about some of these prescriptions too, like Vicodin and Percocet. Those are overdone. There's 4 million prescriptions a year of Vicodin and Percocet, and it's addicting, it's constipating, it makes people sleepy, and there's more deaths from prescription opioids like these than heroin and cocaine combined, and we're talking over like around 12,000. So the doctors need to be cautious prescribing the new drugs. We talked about that, about the safety and so forth, and especially when people are taking too many at a time, like you said, when people are over 65, that many times they're on over 5 drugs.
What do you think one drug does to the chemistry of another drug?
Yeah, nobody's
got a clue.
Nobody's done those studies.
Well, if they've done some of those studies, they're not published. And my guess is because they don't show a positive outcome.
Yeah, well, the patients need to ask these questions, and the FDA just approves these new drugs. And one of the things that Dr. Schiff was suggesting was that maybe the FDA could send out summaries.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't trust them if they did. I mean, the FDA has a revolving door with what? Big Pharma. So does the CDC. When you look at somebody like Julie Gepperding, who was the chief of the CDC a few years ago, where do you think she works now? She got out of that job. She works for Big Pharma in what? Their Department of Immunizations. And she's probably making tons of money there. You'd have to guess she is. And you see that all the time of people going from Big Pharma to the FDA or from the CDC to Big Pharma because there's a whole conflict of interest there that has to do with money. And we have to evolve past that point. And we've got a government that doesn't enforce things that way. You know, it takes us back to where we started this show, back to Stanislaw Brzezinski. Look at the things that the FDA tried to do to Stanislaw. And after all this time and all the millions of dollars, they spent more than $60 million, the FDA did, trying to prosecute Brzezinski. And he had to raise something like $2 to $3 million to defend against it. Do you think he got a penny of that back, even though he won his cases?
Forget
no.
That.
I know how that goes, too, because I and a lot of my friends have been before the California Medical Board asking us about some of the things we have done. And now, fortunately, we've passed some laws here, and I was instrumental in passing that law that made sure that we have a board that's qualified to review people who are doing complementary alternative therapies in the mainstream of medicine. And that was passed in the year 2004. So what we're seeing here is a transition where we're moving at the speed of light in a direction that makes a lot of sense, at least in complementary and alternative medicine. But we need the support of the people. We need to educate you, the public out there, so you have some kind of idea of what the problems are that we're facing if we try to practice medicine that's very good medicine rather than just traditional medicine. The stuff that we use, the drugs and the surgeries and the technologies, are absolutely brilliant. The high-tech stuff that we have is marvelous. We're saving lives that way, but we're costing more lives than we're saving a lot of the time when we use those approaches when they're not necessary and not the best approach to take first. We should always do the simple things first. Lifestyle medicine becomes the first thing we do. If lifestyle medicine doesn't work, we can use non-invasive therapies, things like chiropractic and body work and acupuncture and homeopathy. Those are non-invasive. They don't kill hardly anybody compared to what we do in the mainstream. If that doesn't work, get aggressive. Use supplements and herbs and nutrients, okay, to try and correct the cellular biochemical defects that are causing the problems that we're seeing. And finally, if that doesn't work, then give some thought to doing something like a pharmaceutical drug.
I'd also like to remind everybody that we'll be back live to talk about what's new in the news and medicine, and we'll take your health questions every Monday, Eastern Standard Time from 3 to 4 and Pacific Standard Time from 12 to 1. And if you have any questions about your health, it's 888-874-4888. That's 874-4888. Now, I want to quickly go over this diabetic drug, Actos.
Oh, you've got about 30 seconds left. I don't think we're going
to
get
there. They're linking it to cancer. Well, maybe we could talk about it next week.
Yeah, that might be something. So stay tuned. If you want to know something about Actos and the cancer that we know that it can cause, and find out why Germany and France have taken it off the market, but we haven't, we'll talk about it next week.
And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
Have a wonderful week. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next Monday.